In your spare time, October 2010, I got a questionnaire from Harvard for the 60th reunion of the Harvard graduating class of 1951. Of course, my college was Radcliffe, which at that time was affiliated with but wasn't considered to be Harvard due to a difference in gender. But Harvard often overlooks such details from the lofty eminence where it can consider all sorts of things beneath its notice. Anyhow, the questionnaire is anonymous, therefore presumably gender-free, and it is interesting. The people who are expected to fill it out are, or would be, almost all in their 80s, and 60 years is time enough for all kinds of things to have happened to a bright-eyed young graduate. So there's a polite invitation to widows or widowers to answer for the deceased. And question 1C, if divorced, gives an interesting set of little boxes to check. Once, twice, three times, four or more times, currently remarried, currently living with a partner, none of the above. This last option is a poser. I'm trying to think how you could be divorced and still none of the above. In any case, it seems unlikely that any of those boxes would have been on a reunion questionnaire in 1951. You've come a long way, baby, as the cigarette ad with the bimbo on it used to say. Question 12. In general, given your expectations, how have your grandchildren done in life? The youngest of my grandchildren just turned 4. How has he done in life? Well, very well, on the whole. I wonder what kind of expectations you should have for a 4-year-old. That he'll go on being a nice little boy and learn pretty soon to read and write is all that comes to my mind. I suppose I'm supposed to expect him to go to Harvard, or at least to Columbia like his father and great-grandfather. But being nice and learning to read and write seem quite enough for now. Actually, I don't exactly have expectations. I have hopes and fears. Mostly the fears predominate these days. When my kids were young, I could still hope we might not totally screw up the environment for them. But now that we've done so and are more deeply sold out than ever to profiteering industrialism with its future horizon of a few months, any hope I have that coming generations may have ease and peace in life has become very tenuous and has to reach far, far forward into the dark. Question 13. What will improve the quality of life for the future generations of your family? With boxes to rank importance from 1 to 10, the first choice is improved educational opportunities. Fair enough. Harvard being in the education business, I gave it a 10. The second is economic stability and growth for the U.S. That stymied me totally. What a marvelous example of capitalist thinking, or non-thinking, to consider growth and stability as the same thing. I finally wrote in the margin, "You can't have both," and didn't check a box. The rest of the choices are reduction of the U.S. debt, reduced dependence on foreign energy, improved health care quality and cost, elimination of terrorism, implementation of an effective immigration policy, improved bipartisanship in U.S. politics, export democracy. Since we're supposed to be considering the life of future generations, it seems a strange list, limited to quite immediate concerns and filtered through such current right-wing obsessions as terrorism, effective immigration policy, and the exportation of democracy, which I assume is a euphemism for our policy of invading countries we don't like and trying to destroy their society, culture, and religion. Nine choices, but nothing about climate destabilization, nothing about international politics, nothing about population growth, nothing about industrial pollution, nothing about the control of government by corporations, nothing about human rights or injustice or poverty. Question 14. Are you living your secret desires? Floored again. I finally didn't check yes, somewhat, or no, but wrote in, I have none. My desires are flagrant. But it was question 18 that really got me down. In your spare time, what do you do? Check all that apply. And the list begins, golf. Seventh in the list of 27 occupations after racket sports, but before shopping, TV, and bridge comes creative activities, paint, write, photograph, etc. Here I stopped reading and sat and thought for quite a while. The key words are spare time. What do they mean? To a working person? Supermarket checker, lawyer, highway crewman, housewife, cellist, computer repairer, teacher, waitress. Spare time is the time not spent at your job or at otherwise keeping yourself alive, cooking, keeping clean, getting the car fixed, getting the kids to school. To people in the midst of life, spare time is free time and valued as such. But to people in their 80s? What do retired people have but spare time? I am not exactly retired because I never had a job to retire from. I still work, though not as hard as I did. I have always been and am proud to consider myself a working woman. But to the questioners of Harvard, my life work has been a creative activity, a hobby, something you do to fill up spare time. Perhaps if they knew I'd made a living out of it, they'd move it to a more respectable category, but I rather doubt it. The question remains, when all the time you have is spare, is free, what do you make of it? And what's the difference, really, between that and the time you used to have when you were 50 or 30 or 15? Kids used to have a whole lot of spare time, middle-class kids anyhow. Outside of school, and if they weren't into a sport, most of their time was spare, and they figured out, more or less successfully, what to do with it. I had whole spare summers when I was a teenager. 3 spare months. No stated occupation whatsoever. Much of after school was spare time, too. I read, I wrote, I hung out with Jean and Shirley and Joyce. I moseyed around having thoughts and feelings. Oh, Lord, deep thoughts, deep feelings. I hope some kids still have time like that. The ones I know seem to be on a treadmill of programming, rushing on without pause to the next event on their schedule, the soccer practice, the play date, the whatever. I hope they find interstices and wriggle into them. Sometimes I notice that a teenager in the family group is present in body, smiling, polite, apparently attentive, but absent. I think, I hope, she has found an interstice, made herself some spare time, wriggled into it, and is alone there, deep down there, thinking, feeling. The opposite of spare time is, I guess, occupied time. In my case, I still don't know what spare time is because all my time is occupied. It always has been, and it is now. It's occupied by living. An increasing part of living at my age is mere bodily maintenance, which is tiresome. But I cannot find anywhere in my life a time or a kind of time that is unoccupied. I am free, but my time is not. My time is fully and vitally occupied with sleep, with daydreaming, with doing business and writing friends and family on email, with reading, with writing poetry, with writing prose, with thinking, with forgetting, with embroidering, with cooking and eating a meal and cleaning up the kitchen, with construing Virgil, with meeting friends, with talking with my husband, with going out to shop for groceries, with walking if I can walk, and traveling if we are traveling, with sitting Vipassana sometimes, with watching a movie sometimes, with doing the 8 precious Chinese exercises when I can, with lying down for an afternoon rest, with a volume of Crazy Cat to read, and my own slightly crazy cat occupying the region between my upper thighs and mid-calves, where he arranges himself and goes instantly and deeply to sleep. None of this is spare time. I can't spare it. What is Harvard thinking of? I am going to be 81 next week. I have no time to spare.